Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the first edition of John and Paul.
I'm John.
And I'm Paul. And if you're looking for the John and Paul show, you're in the wrong spot because this is
John and Paul. Oh, it worked. We're going to talk about local and national sports, mainly football, basketball, and baseball, and even throw in a little entertainment.
We'll be remembering certain shows from this past week, and we'll be introducing a special segment unlike anything before.
So stay tuned and get ready for a fun podcast.
Welcome to John and Paul. This is our first podcast, and I would just like to say I'm very excited to be a part about Michigan Prep the Pros. It's just an honor, and I would like to introduce my partner, John.
Hey, everybody. I'm John. I'm a big sports fan. I've been a big sports fan my whole life. I've always been involved in sports, and a little bit about me and Paul's relationship. We've been friends for, I want to say, 5-6 years, and pretty much complete each other's sentences, so this should be a real fun time for everybody.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to doing this with you, John.
Aww.
You were the first person I thought of when coming to this podcast, and it's just, we meshed well with sports. And speaking of one of our very first sports is Tigers. Me and you are both are diehard Tigers fans.
Yep.
Like, it's not baseball season, and we're going into talking about the Tigers.
Yep.
And some of the first big news really is the Cameron Maben trade and Al Avila talking about getting rid of the whole entire team, saying everyone's for sale. How do you feel about that?
You know, initially when I heard Maben was traded, I was really, you know, I was pretty upset because obviously he started off with us and he was part of the Miguel Cabrera package. So to bring him back and for him to play such a great season, despite all the injuries, everything like that, he had a great season. And then to send him off, you know, I'm kind of upset right now.
Who do we even get for Cameron Maben?
Apparently we got a right-handed pitcher, 23-year-old Victor Alcantara. He's been a minor league player his entire career thus far. In his past 2 years, he had a 7-12 record with a 5.62 ERA. And then the year after that, he went 3-7 with a 4.5 ERA. So
that's not good. And it's crazy because I know he wasn't in the lineup much, but when he was in there, bad 300, spark plug for the offense,
speed,
everything that the new Tigers say they want. They want a speedy club like what the Royals did, you know, a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, it's nice. It's always nice to have somebody on the base who can run. You know, when you have people like Victor and Cabrera in the lineup, you know, these guys, if they had a 40-yard dash, they'd be doing it in 7 seconds. So
exactly. But, you know, you talk about, you know, speed and all this of the Tigers. You brought up that, you know, the other day that we do have Jacoby Jones and Stephen Moyer off the bench, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're two young guys. Last season, for all the Tiger fans out there, definitely saw Moya. He's a lefty. He's about 6'7", so he's a big guy. In the outfield, you could tell, you know, he doesn't have a lot of experience in outfield. Maybe he'd work better as a first baseman, who knows, but the guy does have power, so he's going to be part of the future. And then another guy is Jacoby Jones.
Yeah, he had this nice spark plug offense,
two games. He's got everything on. He's a 5-tool player. You know, he's good in the field. Everything you could ask for, this guy has. So maybe the Cameron Maben trade isn't as bad as initially, you know, as initially we thought it would be.
Because it brings up the whole, you know, salary dump thing. You know, Al Avila, he wants to get younger. And, you know, we've come the last, 10, 11 years with the Tigers. We've had Dave Dombrowski. He is
great,
not afraid to trade young talent and spend money. And I'm still a firm believer. Like, you have Verlander, you have Miggy, you have Victor, you have JD. You have all these big-name guys, and they're not getting younger.
Yeah, no, not so.
And it's kind of – I understand, oh, we want to sell whoever, but let's be realistic here. You're not trading Verlander, no trade
you
clause.
Can't.
He's
you
the
can't.
Face of the franchise.
He is. He brought us back. Remember his rookie year? You can't get rid of that guy.
And plus what he did this year after being, 2 years ago, he's hurt, he's done, you know.
Yeah,
no.
He's pure Michigan.
He is. Yeah.
He's what the commercials are about.
We should make – that's what we should do. We should make a pure Michigan commercial.
Kate up to Justin Verlander.
Kate Upton's hair blowing in the wind, Justin Verlander. This is pure Michigan.
And yeah, that's tourism forever. People would always want to come to Michigan just because of that ad.
But I'm just such a firm believer. It's just like, you have these players, they're on your roster, go for the win. Like, Verlander doesn't want to go through another rebuild. I'm sure.
True.
Miggy's got a ring, but he wants one here.
He does. He does. It's been a long time. How long ago was that?
It was his rookie year.
Yeah.
Rookie year.
That's 100 pounds ago for Cabrera.
Third baseman Cabrera to you. But there is one thing to say about him being on, third base. He did win his Triple Crown when he played third base.
True.
That was pretty impressive.
He did seem like he was in better shape, too, at that time. So,
but going back to the whole everyone's for sale, a couple people I do see that we could really get rid of is probably J.D. Martinez. He's realistically, I think, the big name that can bring in talent. And, you know, because Ian Kinsler, he's got no trade clause. He just won a gold glove. Like, keep the guy. He's a gritty Tigers player.
Yep.
And I think he fits well, in that leadoff spot. He's not young, but he's not crazy old.
And it's nice to have a consistent second baseman. We know, we had Placido Polanco, who is
one of my favorite Tigers.
He was great for us. And then there was this huge lull where the second base position was so sketchy. There were just guys being thrown at that position. But now we get Kinsler.
For cheap, too.
For cheap. For Prince Fielder, who knows what he's
doing. Retired.
Yeah.
Gone. So, out of the league. That's a steal.
That's a win. That's a, what else could you ask for in a trade?
And he's going to hit you 300. Mm-hmm. And he's going to hit you, 10 to 20 home runs.
Yeah.
Get you. He's getting like 70 RBIs in that 1-2 hole. And that's really good for a second baseman and someone who's like your first or second hitter most of the night.
Yep. You have to appreciate that.
But, it all goes back to, so we traded some players.
Mm-hmm.
Porcello.
Yep.
Porcello, what did he – we traded Porcello for Cespedes. And Cespedes, one of my favorite players.
Mm-hmm.
And then we end up trading Cespedes for a young Michael Fulmer.
Yep.
Some random pitcher.
Some young pitcher, double-A pitcher. He's not going to turn into anything, but he does.
What does he do?
This guy comes out – has a great year. One of the best rookie years in Tiger history, probably, right?
Yeah, he's stud. Next to Verlander, right?
There. Yeah. So Fulmer ends up winning Rookie of the Year with a 11-7 record, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure something. Yeah, 11-7.
So not crazy stats, but when this guy pitched, you could just tell the team wanted to play for him.
ERA was low.
Yep.
Great pitcher.
He's a great pitcher.
And it kind of goes with that whole thing that we're kind of talking about, that youth movement, salary dump. You got the Fulmers, the Boyds. And I can see what they're trying to do. Like, I get their point, but it's just, I think you got to have that nice core, mix the young with the old.
Yeah.
You can't dump everyone because it's like they say they want to still compete, but if you're selling Verlander, you're selling Miggy. Like, let's be realistic here. Miggy led every single one of our offensive stats besides, I think, stolen bases. He's not going to lead that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You can't just
– yeah.
Who are you going to replace it with that lineup?
The future's not grim is what you're trying to say.
Yes.
The future is not nearly as bad as anyone wants to tell you. The Tigers are a good team, clearly, as long as Ilitch is around. He's willing to spend money. This guy wants to see a championship in his lifetime.
He really does. And he's like Miggy and Verlander, he's not getting any younger.
And, this year we had a lot of major injuries. Zimmerman was out. He was one of the best pitchers in the league before he got injured.
Really was. Yeah, he started off high. He was like 5-1.
Yeah. So
ERA under 2.
So next year you're gonna have all these people back, and it's gonna. I feel like we're gonna have a nice run. I really do.
And you draft some people, and you want to shore up that bullpen. That bullpen is definitely the worst spot of our team. Clearly, it has been.
Yeah.
But it's not like they're not doing anything. Like they signed Justin Wilson. In that Porcello trade, we got back Alex Wilson, who's been a stud, really good relief pitcher. So it's like they're doing things. They signed Mark Lowe from the Yankees.
Oof.
They're trying. It's not like they're
that's
not.
True.
It's
that's
not
a
like
good,
they're
that's
like
a good
oh,
way to look at it.
It's not like let's just put everything into the offense, everything in starting pitching. It's like no, they have tried to fix the bullpen, but it just hasn't worked out for them, and it's kind of a shame because you missed the playoffs by one game.
Yeah, that's what I like about you, Paul, is that you have a glass half full mentality.
I try. You don't want to be negative about stuff.
That's
like
true. Especially for your home team, you might as well root for them.
If you don't think you're going to win, you're not going to win.
True.
You know what I mean? If you just have this poor mentality, like, why even go out there? Why even, you're not going to win.
Great. And we were just talking about Fulmer. And he's another stud for the pitchers. But how about – we were just talking about Porcello as well. Porcello and Scherzer, they were in our lineup, weren't they?
And
they were a couple of our pitchers, weren't they?
And I think they got a couple of hardware to add to the collection. Porcello won the AL, barely beating Justin Verlander out.
Yep.
And then
– no comment.
No comment. And then Scherzer basically single-handedly winning the Cy Young over in the National League.
Yep. Yeah, the guy's incredible. Both of them are. Porcello, when Leland was his manager, there'd be a lot of times where he would take him out in crucial situations. He was young. He didn't have the experience to go past the sixth. But now Porcello, when you're paying the guy this kind of money, he's going to pitch those late innings.
And now he's showing the ability, especially in a hitter's ballpark like Fenway.
Oh, yeah.
That he is showing that he's a pretty good pitcher.
He is, yeah.
Especially because he's a ground ball pitcher.
Yeah, that's what you need in that ballpark.
And he is the master of that sinker, two-seam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty good pitcher. And I kind of wish we had him, but if we didn't, yeah, we wouldn't have Fulmer, right?
That's true. That's true. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to debate between those two.
But I'm currently looking up the stat right here for mm-hmm. Verlander, and I'm trying to make his case why he should have won.
Yeah, explain to Kate Upton right now why Verlander didn't win.
Give me 1 second here.
The Tigers fans were upset, but I think the person who was really upset was Kate Upton, because apparently, you know, she went on Twitter. I'm sure everybody heard about what she said. She was really upset because Verlander didn't win, and it's hard to say why he didn't win.
You're right. He's got some really impressive numbers. Verlander, I'm pretty sure, led the league in strikeouts for the American League.
Okay.
It's
a hard stat to argue with.
Yeah, he's a flamethrower. And it's nice seeing, you know, after he got hurt, making that comeback. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It looked like he was done. People were willing to trade him. I was one of those people who, you know, once, especially Verlander, he was such a workhorse for us. And this guy was throwing 99 miles an hour every night, pitching 130 pitches. So it's not like we were going light with this guy, and I could definitely see why people would think that his career was over.
So I got those stats for you right here.
Mm-hmm.
So Justin Verlander, it's this chart on Reddit that someone posted to our Detroit Tigers. So Justin Verlander led the American League in games started with 34, Ks 254, a whip of 1, batting average against .207, innings 227.2.
Come on.
A WAR for a pitcher 6.2. WAR overall 5.2. And games with 2 ERA or fewer 23.
Wow.
So there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 12 stats here, and Verlander leads in 9 of those compared to the other starters. So there's Porcello up here, Happ, Kluber, Sale, and Sanchez. And it's color-coded, and it's basically saying Justin Verlander should, by numbers, should have won the Cy Young.
You know, maybe it's voter fatigue, because Verlander has been there before. You know, remember that year when he won the Cy Young and the MVP? That's as great of an honor as it gets for a pitcher. So
it really is.
So maybe you want, you know, Porcello was kind of Verlander's apprentice. So now Porcello's taken over. That's the only rationale I can really have for it. And Boston's a huge media market, bigger than Detroit. So,
but it's like you got to give it to the person who really deserves it.
I agree. Unfortunately, I don't have a vote. Otherwise, I might have been able to push him over the edge.
Oh, and this other stat that was crucial.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that here? Sorry about that. The average runs per game for Porcello was 7.6 and Verlander was 4.3.
That says it all right there.
So,
that says Boston, they got a high power offense. They always have a good team, you know, especially in Ortiz's last year. That team was playing fired up. That team was ready to go every single night. And Porcello wasn't getting that kind of run support even when he was with us.
He really wasn't.
So
it's weird with pitchers like that. But, you know, there's another sports that are going on right now. And basketball's, you know, pretty big. And the Pistons right now, they're 6-9.
Yep.
Currently without Reggie Jackson.
Yep.
Are basically our best player.
Borderline all-star player.
And from what I'm hearing from friends, other media, is that Pistons are trash.
Mm-hmm.
How can you say the Pistons are trash right now without their best player?
Yeah.
Or their 1A, 1B to Drummond.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, take the best player out of almost any team, and that's what you're going to get. You take Carmelo Anthony out of New York. That team's not going to be very good. They're pretty average right now, but you take a star out, how do you expect them to achieve?
You can't.
Because
Stan Van has a vision.
He's
building this team around Reggie Jackson and the pick-and-roll offense with him and Drummond.
Yeah.
And watching that last year, it was really fun. I liked where the team was going. I liked the solid pickups, the Tobiases, the Marcus Morrises.
Mm-hmm.
Stan's doing a really good job of being the GM, and it's just hard to watch this team without Reggie Jackson, because I know they're capable of so much more, because he's the engine that makes the team go.
He is. You know, he can drive the lane, he can dish it, he can do anything you want pretty much, and he's On top of that, he's 6'4", 6'5". So this guy's got elite size. Our starting lineup, the shortest guy is Reggie Jackson, who's 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah, that's a tall lineup.
That's a big lineup. So we're a big matchup problem for a lot of teams. And now we got Ish Smith in there. Obviously, Ish is a serviceable guard. He's been on multiple teams during his tenure in the NBA, but he just doesn't compare to Reggie.
Yeah, he's not Reggie Jackson. I had him on my fantasy team for a minute, and he's averaging 12 and 8. Like, those are some pretty good numbers, but it's just a different type
it's
of player.
It's just an impact, yeah.
Yeah, Reggie Jackson was giving you almost 20 and 8 every night with, like, 3 or 4 rebounds and Mr. Fourth Quarter, too.
Oh, yeah.
He was scoring maybe 8 points in the first 3 quarters, but when you needed him most in the fourth to get those hard points, like the other night against Houston, I just felt like there was no one that just wanted to, like, take over the game and try and – I mean, granted, KCP had a great game.
He did.
I think he had 26, missed a crucial free throw.
Yeah, well, Harden missed a couple, too.
He did. That was okay. He was 14 for 19 from the line.
Yeah, that's not like Harden.
It's not like Harden at all.
He gave the Pistons so many chances to get back in the game, to win the game, so many opportunities. And you don't want to bank a win – based on if another superstar is having a bad game or he missed a couple shots.
Yeah, because you got to focus on your team. You can't worry about what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it ultimately ended up coming down to KCP missing a free throw.
Yep.
Harden got it. He missed another free throw. And what did Houston do? Andre got the rebound off his free throw, fouled him immediately.
Can you tell me, Paul, why Andre Drummond was in the game at that point? To explain it for anybody listening who might have not listened or who might not have seen the game.
Why he should have been in the game?
Why Baines wasn't in there?
I don't know. So when you give up lack of rebounding for a better free throw shooter, Baines is a way better free throw shooter.
He is. It's not even comparable.
And you're going to – okay, so Drummond's a better free throw shooter this year. He's up to almost about 50%.
Yeah.
And they're saying, Houston – there was, 3 seconds left on the clock?
Mm-hmm.
They would rather foul Andre Drummond than give us the opportunity to try and push the ball down court and make a miracle shot. They're saying they'd rather let Andre Drummond lose the game instead of something like that. And
I know. And just real quick for the record, Baines' career free throw percentage, 80%.
That's huge.
That's huge. For a 7-foot guy to be able to hit those kind of free throws, wouldn't you want him in there at that point of the game instead of Drummond? I understand Drummond's he's probably the best rebounding big in the league.
Yeah.
There's no denying that, but in that kind of position, the other forwards aren't going to be crashing, the offensive rebound. They're not going to risk a foul in that situation if they're not afraid of the guy shooting free throws.
Right.
So putting in Baines, I mean, I don't want to question Stan Van Gundy. I love Van Gundy. I love everything he's done for the city, for the Pistons. But you really have to question him on that aspect.
You do. You're right. And, you're trying to win the game. And you bring up a good point about Baines. Look at what Stan Van did over in Orlando with Martin Gortat. He was a very good backup, one of Stan Van's people. What happens if Baines plays more? Like, look at the other night. Like, about a week ago, he went 20-8.
Yeah.
Very good performance for his first, I feel like, real minutes out there as like a starter.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. But the big thing is when you're paying Drummond $25 million a year, and that's what he got, how can you put in Baines over him?
Oh, I completely agree. So are you trying to say we should maybe move Drummond or?
I don't want to say 100% that I want to move Drummond, but I'm just saying that it might be an option. But, it's on the table. Every single thing should be on the table for the Pistons.
That's true. Because, I mean, you've seen Stan already try and wheel and deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's flipped DJ Augustine and Ilyasova for some pretty good pieces.
For Jackson.
He's got Morris. Would he give up a second-round pick for Morris?
Yeah, and Morris has never played like this in his life. He's been great for us. He's been a go-to scorer. It's awesome.
And Tobias is becoming one of my favorite players.
Yeah.
Not because he's on my fantasy team. But
It helps.
But he's consistent.
Yeah.
He's going to get you 16 to 19 points. He's going to get you 4 or 5 rebounds and 3 to 5 assists.
Yep.
That's a solid Stan Van player. He's going to play defense.
Gets the line.
It's perfect. And what we gave up for him, DJ Augustine and Ilyasova for a borderline star.
Yeah. I can't believe they fell for that. I can't believe they gave Tobias Harris.
It's highway robbery.
It really is. You got to love Harris. And I'm guessing now, but I'm pretty sure he's 23, 24 years old. So he's a young guy. He's not. He's only played probably a third of the way through his career at this point. This guy's got a lot of developing. This whole team is very young. We got a lot of developing to do.
And I like where they're going, and I believe in Stan. I just, you know, on the final note right here, I'll let you get yours in. I think once Reggie Jackson comes back, the Pistons are going to be completely different, and you're going to see why they were doing so bad without Reggie.
Okay. And at this point, do you see him as a playoff team?
Yeah. Not at this point with Reggie, yes.
Reggie?
Jackson.
I think so, too. I don't think the East is as tough as...
No.
I really don't.
We're 6-9, and we're, what, the 10 seed? One game out.
So teams like Milwaukee, I think we're better than Milwaukee. I think we're better than the Knicks, even though we lost to them recently. But we did beat them earlier in the year.
Yeah, that was a good win. And speaking of someone else who we did beat up early in this year was Russell Westbrook and OKC.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, how's he doing without Kevin Durant?
It's definitely been an interesting transition. You know, I know Kevin Durant had those foot problems. I believe he had a Lisfranc injury, it can be devastating for basketball players. So Durant didn't play a lot the past couple of years. And you saw Westbrook do this night after night when Durant wasn't there.
Yeah, well, he got him to like almost the 8 seed that one year when they were out, basically averaging a triple-double what he is right now.
Yep. The guy's relentless. He has energy for days. He doesn't run out of energy. He can play all 48 minutes, 82 games. I don't want to jinx him by any means, but if this guy can stay healthy, this is going to be a hell of a season.
And you bring up that point. He never runs out of energy. He's always running.
Mm-hmm.
There's another player who's having a very similar season to him right now is James Harden, who we both got to see the other night.
Yeah, it was an honor.
It was an honor. He's so smooth.
He is.
Like watching him play, I want to bring back to the comparison. Russell Westbrook, when he plays, it's like he is just playing so hard to get these triple doubles. But watching James Harden, so smooth. It doesn't even look like he's trying out there.
You're right.
Like watching the other day, he would toy with you, dribble, bring it up the court, toy with you.
Yeah.
Dribble it a couple times, and then do the craziest pass to Trevor Ariza in the corner and splash a three.
In the words of Michael Scott, basketball is a lot like jazz, and James Harden is a fantastic saxophone player because this guy will look away, pass, like you were just saying. This guy is just amazing, and I feel like he gets a lot of undeserved crap because his defense isn't there all the time.
Oh, you could see it there tonight. He definitely would stand around. But I think he's trying to focus more on the offensive end. And
he saves some energy. You can't blame him.
You can't.
You know, there's four other guys to play defense. There's only one James Harden on the planet.
And you don't want him putting all of his effort in the defense. And when it comes down to offense, you have Trevor Ariza or Corey Brewer trying to lead your offense with the 2 minutes left on the clock. And if he's too tired to go down and try and get you a foul to put you up too.
Yeah. You know, it goes back to what I was saying about Drummond. If you're paying these guys $25 million a year, you don't want the second-rate players taking their shots. You want your superstars taking your shots. You want your superstars winning the games.
But you also need them to have some trust.
True.
I think seeing James Harden the other night, he didn't have a good day from the line. I mean, he was like 6-for-17. But he showed a lot of trust in passing the ball. And when I'm watching Westbrook, it's just like the only time I feel like – he passes the ball when he literally knows he's in trouble, and then he gives the ball up with 5 seconds left, and hopefully Oladipo or Adams can make a dunk or a little jump shot. I feel like he just doesn't put his team in a good enough position to succeed.
Yeah,
they're both around the same record, but I definitely feel like James Harden, like we said, is the smoother player and a little bit better of a player.
Yeah. You know, Westbrook kind of reminds me of that guy that you play with at the rec center who, if you don't cut at the right time or you miss a wide-open three or – anything like that, this guy just yells at you on the court, and you just feel really uncomfortable the rest of the game. That's how
a lot of pressure.
Yeah, that's how Westbrook kind of plays. Like, he can mess up, and that's okay, but if Robertson or who else is on the team, Oladipo, he's going after those guys. He's screaming at them.
Like last night when Nick Young hit the game-winning shot and Westbrook was guarding him, and he just decided not to guard him. If that was another player, I think Westbrook would probably be tearing him into a new one.
He would. Granted, it was – okay, so for the situation was, it was the end of the game. There was 6 seconds left. Inbounded the ball. They swung it around to Nick Young. They swung it around to Lou Williams. And Nick Young stepped in front of him, stole the ball, and then shot a turnaround jumper. So, and they won. And the Lakers beat the West, the Oklahoma City Westbrooks.
Oakland City, I like what you said there. Well, he had a triple-double early this year, I mm-hmm. think, with 40 shots.
That sounds about right. That's Westbrook's game. But, you know,
he's going to win you some, he's going to lose you some.
You win by the Westbrook, you lose by the Westbrook.
And, you know, we've talked Westbrook, we've talked Harden, and a little bit of Durant. Mm-hmm. All three of these guys are on the same team.
Unbelievable.
Their second year all in, went to the finals. And the owner's like, eh, I don't want to pay. Eh.
Yeah.
We're going to trade you to Houston. Eh.
Yeah.
Go over the luxury tax. You're going to make it work.
Especially now with how much the salary cap moved up.
Those contracts would look like nothing right now. Nothing. They would have paid them 4 or 5 years ago.
And Harden would have been getting paid six man money. He wouldn't have been making the kind of money he's making now. So
what, like a 5-year 80 of what like Jackson got last year?
Yeah. And they just didn't want to do it. So now they're stuck with Westbrook. And that's
you basically
Oklahoma
forced
City.
Out Durant. I feel like they never did it. The ownership never did anything to – it was just Westbrook and Durant, just those two. They didn't give them really anyone help. It was just, you guys play your ISO ball, you guys do your thing, and hopefully we can get back to the finals.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel about Boogie Cousins, DeMarcus Cousins? He's in the same kind of situation.
Trade him.
As those guys trade him?
Get him out of there.
Get him out?
It's not going to work there.
It seems like it. I think you're right.
He's trying to put his team on his back, but it's a little bit different when you're a power forward and a point guard. Because the point guard is going to get the dominant possession. It's kind of mm-hmm. hard for him to bring up the ball every single time.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I feel like OKC's winning a few more games because Westbrook has the ball in his hands all the time, and he can create more things. And with Boogie, it's kind of hard being a forward. I think he needs to play with a John Wall-type player.
Oh, you know, especially
maybe him to the Washington?
You're right. I mean, in today's NBA, they got rid of hand checking. You know, they added three in the key, like, I don't know, 15 years ago.
So yeah.
That's a Shaq. One of the
Which
Shaq
Drummond ones. Had two back-to-back the other night. Did you see that?
He did. That was a lack of effort. But
yeah.
Let's stick on Boogie.
Sorry.
Let's stick with another.
I'm still a little upset about that game.
Me too. I agree. But it's hard. You're right. It's hard to be a dominant big in this league and make an impact on your team because you have somebody like Steph Curry, this guy's going to shoot, if he needs to, he's going to shoot 23 pointers in a game, and he can do it. Cousins, if your team's down by 10, it's a lot harder.
You have a Rudy Gay bringing the ball up, and you don't know if you're going to get that ball because Rudy Gay is going to shoot it. Yeah, you want Rudy Gay bringing the ball up?
And it's hard to post up. It's easy to shoot a wide-open jumper. It's hard to post up and, you know, being with these huge centers. It wears on you, and I don't blame Boogie at all, kind of, because – I can understand the frustration when you don't have any talent around you. It's tough.
It really is tough. But speaking of a tough game, Sunday,
mm-hmm.
Detroit Lions, they pulled the game out. They won.
They did.
First place in the division.
Versus who? The mighty, mighty Jacksonville Jaguars.
The mighty, mighty Jaguars and Blake Bortles.
Yep.
Who the Lions roughed up a little bit.
They did.
Yeah, he listed as questionable on my fantasy team right now. Mm-hmm. He wasn't looking right that whole game.
And he hasn't looked right this whole season, actually. You know, last year, it seemed like he was a competent player. You know, it seemed like everything was going his way. He's got those two big wide receivers. They got Julius Thomas.
Yeah, Hearns and the guy from Michigan, Robinson, yeah.
And then they got Julius Thomas, who's a big-time tight end. He's a huge guy. He had a lot of chemistry with Peyton Manning, but you send him down to Florida and Jacksonville, and you've seen – you see how it is. You know, Jacksonville is a tough place to win.
It really is, and it's hard. You know, they don't have the big crowd. They don't, you know, really – I feel like they don't really have the full support of, you know, the city. They're not, you know, a huge market. But, mm-hmm. you know, the Lions defense really stepped up this week. And I know it's the Jags. I know it's something special. But my thing is, if you're playing against a bad team
mm-hmm.
and your defense – gives up huge yardage and all that, you have a bad defense. And it's just like, you know, oh, wow, the Lions play good against, you know, bad defense. But it's like, that's what you want. You want your team to play against the bad teams to show that, like, you at least are better than the bad teams. It's not like it was a shootout and you're like, wow, the Lions defense is really bad now. It's like, no, they stepped up when they needed to, got a couple of interceptions, got a couple of fumbles. And that's what you want to see this kind of late into the season, this defense, you know, them getting healthy. Hans is getting there.
Yep.
Now they came back. Slide back.
Hyder's good.
I like him.
He's good. And, yeah, so after this game, we moved to 6-4.
We hold our own destiny.
First in the division. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the Lions
Because honestly, this year, I didn't think we were going to be this far. I thought we were going to be like a 3-5 win team. I've already exceeded my expectations.
They have. And the Packers and the Vikings have really blown, you know, they've blown their seasons. Granted, the Vikings have had a lot of injuries. But still, the Lions are actually taking advantage of it. And that's not something you see every year from the Lions. So I don't know if it's a change in the
organization.
Yeah, I don't know if it's something like that. But the whole team just doesn't give up. And maybe it's Stafford.
I agree with you. I think it's Stafford. And I think they're finally really starting to buy into this Jim Caldwell system. You know, he's kind of like this conservative, like, do your job, good things are going to happen kind of thing. And I really do think, you know, it's nice seeing that we have the elite quarterback being talked about in our division right now.
Yeah.
It's a good thing when your quarterback's playing good and he's winning you games.
It is.
Because that's the difference between, I saw this on Reddit, this difference between the Lions and the Browns is Matthew Stafford.
It is.
They have a similar roster, similar players, good players on defense, or okay players on defense, okay players on offense. But we have Stafford leading us out there.
Yeah.
And when you have a franchise quarterback at that, you pay him, like we're going to pay him after the season. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather go out there with Stafford, knowing what his highs are. Yes. Then an unknown commodity, next Carson Wentz or the next Jared Goff next offseason.
Yeah, you never want to bank on that. And anytime someone says to me that they're sick of Stafford, well, not so much this year, the haters have kind of calmed down, but in years past, they want to just get rid of Stafford. Do those people remember Dante Culpepper, Jeff Garcia? Like, some of these names are so horrible. You don't want to go back to a situation where the quarterback is the biggest question on your team. That's the worst place to be in. And that's, like you were saying, the Browns, that's kind of where they're in right now.
And there's a lot of teams around the league like that. But it's a good thing knowing that, okay, we know Stafford in his ceiling can be a borderline top five quarterback. But we also know in his bad days he can be like a round off, you know, 20 quarterback when he has bad days. But I really think this whole marriage between Jim Bob Cooter is really – it's working well. And the whole Calvin not being there, he's forced to spread the ball around. There's five players on our team that have 45 catches.
Wow.
That's showing how much he's spreading the ball out.
That's some distribution right there.
It really is. And I've been looking – I'm a really big stats guy, and I always look at the box scores, and I see, wow, 7 people got the ball today. 8 people got the ball today.
That's nice.
And no one's having more than, like, 6 or 7 catches.
Yeah.
So you don't know where the ball is going now. So you can't, like, the whole Calvin thing, oh, he's going to Calvin this play, he's going to Calvin this play, because remember the days when we had, like, Chris Durham at receiver and Nate Burleson and Brandon Pettigrew, like –
Yeah, it's nice to have more money to spread around rather than – I mean, I miss Calvin. I love Calvin. He's one of my favorite players. But it's nice to not have somebody who's that amount of money clogging up all the rest of your wide receivers.
Because with the money saving by Calvin retiring is – we've got Anquan Boldin.
Yeah.
He's not putting up stud numbers, but he is exactly what this team needs right now.
Oh, he's great.
He's getting open. I think he has 4 or 5 touchdowns. That's key. He's a big body. He's like – the way I look at him, he's – you know, he's – he's going down the post, and Stafford's just kind of dumping the ball off to him, and he's just big body receiver.
He knows where to be. He's been in the league for so long, and he's been good for so long. It's not like he started off and people thought he was going to be a bust. He started off really good.
He did.
Like the game when against the Lions, his rookie season, he got 200 yards. He destroyed us.
Yeah, remember that scare? I know we're changing the subject. Remember that scare, though? Thankfully, he's still in the league. When Kurt Warner threw him that ball, and he kind of got hit.
Oh, you're right.
Just – glad he's on our team now. And he's a big third down possession guy. I've seen Stafford go to him on third down more often than not.
Yeah.
He's reliable.
Well, you got, you know, you have your two best cornerbacks on Marvin Jones and Golden Tate. So you're going to have to bring on a nickelback who's probably 5'9", you know, 190 pounds going against Anquan Boldin, who's a big guy.
Yeah, he's big bodied.
And he's strong. And he's not going down with just one guy. It's going to take a couple guys to bring him down. And if you're trying to press him at the line, it's not happening.
And this whole thing with Stafford right now, you know, throwing to all these key players, making these good throws, having more options, the running game has been a pretty big issue.
I was just about to ask you about that. I pulled up just pulled up the Lions rushing stats from last game. Dwayne Washington, 13 attempts, 6 yards. Stafford, 2 attempts, 0 yards. Golden Tate apparently ran.
He had that fumble, remember?
Yep, he had a fumble. 1 attempt, minus 6. Riddick, decent game, but they didn't give it to him enough. 4 attempts, 13 yards. And I know, talking about Riddick, we were talking about him earlier.
I love Riddick.
And you're saying how you want to include him in the offense even more.
Make him a almost an every down back.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? I think they're using him wrong. They're trying to use him up the middle. Give him stretch plays.
Yeah,
give
yes,
him
yes,
runs
yes,
out of
yes.
the shotgun up the middle. Like, try and mix the running game around instead of just power eye, boom, power eye, boom.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe give him like what we're doing, those little dump off screens, turn them in the run. But I have a quick stat about the Lions rushing yards.
Uh-huh.
Matthew Stafford is playing 103 games.
Okay.
We have had 7 total 100-yard rushers.
That cannot be right.
Behind
Come
him.
On.
That is true. And the last person to do it was Reggie Bush
oh.
on Thanksgiving
oh.
2013.
Oh, it just keeps getting worse.
That's basically 3 years ago tomorrow.
That's rough. You know, in a lot of games, I mean, we're trying to come back. We're not trying to establish a run because we have a 7-point lead. We're trying to come back from being 7 points down. So the best way to do that, especially in today's game, is passing the ball.
It is.
So it is nice to have Stafford, and this stat might kind of correlate because Stafford is such a good quarterback that they don't really need to run the ball. But
you need to run the ball.
Yeah, just for Stafford's sake, you know, don't make the guy – I don't know. It's just not worth it. You got to have a decent running back.
I would just like to see them open up the game and no huddle or all shotgun instead of trying to establish this run. Oh, it's 3rd and 9
yes.
now because
yes.
we can't get any. Why don't you try and pass to open up the run instead
yeah.
of the other way around, run to open up the pass? We're a passing team. That's what we are. That's what we do. Why don't we pass it a few times? Stay in that shotgun set. Now it's like, okay, are they going to pass? No, give it to Reddick up the middle for a draw, 10 yards, boom. Oh, throw the next play. Because now it's kind of like, oh, are they going to run in this shotgun or are they going to pass in the shotgun? They know, oh, they're in the I formation. They're just going to give it up the middle to Dwayne Washington. It's a little bit too predictable, like bringing up that. Okay, so they bring in Dwayne Washington. Oh, they know it's going to be a power run.
Yep.
Oh, shotgun sweep to Reddick. It's just, you know, I think you need to have a little bit more creativity on the offensive run.
So you were just talking about Jim Bob Cooter. What do you have to say about that? Because – you know, like you were just saying, a lot of his run schemes are kind of simple. You know, like you said, when Washington's in the game, they're doing a certain kind of run. And then last game, they tried doing a pitch to the outside. I don't know how many times, but it was just so frustrating watching them get stuffed over and over again on the same plays.
Yeah, and I feel like they're always running to the short end of the field.
Yes. Yes, on pitches.
You want space.
Don't you want
to
go to the open side on a pitch with a guard pulling? There's too many guys to go to the short side of the field.
But the one thing I can do, give Jim Bob Cooter credit, is he might have taken this from somebody, was after that big play after Eric Ebron, that little 60-yard bomb.
Oh,
Eric
one of
Ebron,
the best plays of the season, probably.
That was sweet. Stafford kind of looked like Favre there, stepping out there. That's a story for a different day. But what they do, first and goal, put Ebron in motion, boom, handoff, end zone.
Yep.
That was a play we saw weeks ago from the Minnesota game.
Yep.
And it worked perfectly.
Yep.
Stuff like that, I feel like, can work.
You know, and right when that happened, and I pointed out, I was watching the game with my dad, and the first thing he says, oh, well, I guess the Lions are finally learning. we stole their play. So
yeah, why don't we use plays that work? Why don't you take a play? Oh,
apparently
Dallas
they
used
are.
Play. Yeah, it looks like it now,
it's hard to hate on the Lions. I'm so used to, you know, talking to people and just hating on the Lions, but this year it's like, hell yeah, let's go Lions.
You got a good quarterback?
Let's do it. I need a new hoodie. Like, my other one's kind of small, you know. I got to buy some new merch.
I wish Mike Graham still worked for the Lions. Maybe we can get something from him.
There you go.
But that's it for the sports talk. We're going to take a quick break, but I would like to introduce, when we're coming back from break, our first segment. John, would you like to tell us about it?
Well, so this past week, Paul and I, you know, we discussed – we're both big movie fans, and we both have access to Netflix, so we decided to do something kind of fun. We're going to do a shitty Netflix movie segment, and this week we decided to do True Memoirs of an International Assassin, which is a masterpiece starring Kevin James. Kevin James, the Oscar-winning, one of the best actors in modern-day history. So when we come back, we're going to talk about Kevin James, and we're going to give him the credit he deserves.
Bye.
Welcome back to John and Paul.
We gonna take it there. We 30 deep, little nigga, we right there. You better holler.
Welcome back to John and Paul. So we are going to introduce our Netflix segment. It's True Memoirs of an International Assassin. And, you know, John Pelnuk, Oscar-winning Kevin James. So I'll give you a quick little synopsis of the movie. Starts off with a movie. Some spy action movie going on. Hey. Having a good time doing all this, and then, you know, going on crazy James Bond mysteries and doing all that kind of fun stuff, and then flash boom out, writing a book. The book is about him being a spy. He goes on to the movie, he meets a publisher, he wants to publish the movie. And they convince him to tell the movie it's a true book.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, gets kidnapped.
Yeah.
By this crazy, what were they? They were some.
It was some kind of criminal ring or something. And basically Kevin James is, apparently he's trained in all these different kinds of karates and all these different kind of mixed martial arts. But at the end of the day, it's Kevin James, and Netflix was hyping this movie up. You know, when you go to Netflix, they have this huge advertisement that says
presented by Netflix,
Memoirs of an International Assassin. And you know, when that pops up, you think it's going to be like a crazy action movie with Sylvester Stallone or something. And then you see it's the guy from King of Queens.
How are you going to sell that?
Not the guy that you normally have in those kind of movies.
So, and this fit exactly what we were trying to go for. We were trying to go for that shitty Netflix movie. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really funny. Wasn't good. We got to about halfway to the movie, and we both looked at each other and we're like, "We gotta stop. We gotta stop. This is not a good movie." And I was talking to John earlier in the movie. I was like, "I bet you know what they're gonna do. He's a book writer. He's going on this crazy, actual spy type thing now."
Spoilers.
Big
spoilers.
He's going to write another book, his experience, mm-hmm. and he's going to get even more money and more famous off of all of this.
Yeah.
Which ended up happening because we skipped right to the end.
Yep. Might as well just go right to the end.
Go back to the end.
And currently, Paul, let me just tell you this real quick. On Rotten Tomatoes, this is what it says. It says it holds a rare 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Ha. Ding, 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 ding. I do not think we're going to have a better shitty Netflix movie segment than this one. It's going to be hard to top.
It's
going
to be hard to top. You know, we really got to look through the catalog and try to find the perfect shitty movie.
Probably. I think I know what the next one's going to be.
Don't say it, but I'm excited.
It could possibly be an Adam Sandler movie.
Oh, all right.
One of his best friends, Adam Sandler, Kevin James combo.
Are you talking about Jack and Jill?
Maybe. It could be. I mean, they did that one movie, We Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. Mm-hmm. That was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a decent film.
But those guys are turning into sellouts, and their movie quality is kind of...
It's something else. I mean, I don't know if Kevin James ever had a career like Adam Sandler, because when we were younger, you know, Adam Sandler was in The Waterboy, Mr. Deeds, so many, like, Big Daddy... I can't even think of the golf movie right now.
Oh, Happy Gilmore. Great.
Yeah, Happy
movie.
Gilmore, of course. There's so many Adam Sandler classics. So for him to just take this downward spiral, it's been pretty upsetting, because Adam Sandler is a huge part of, like, the comedic movies that I love.
Yeah, he did have some really good movie. It makes that good point. You're right. Kevin James was never really Adam Sandler. He was never really Adam Sandler. And, you know, he was King of Queens, like you said. And he's trying to do this. And it's just, he's trying to do this, you know, Netflix is picking him up.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because he's been in all these new
movies.
How about
Paul Blart? He has to have an audience. And I'm not hating on anybody. I understand everyone has their own opinion, but Kevin James, come on.
Yeah, he's doing something right. I mean, he's getting all these deals for new movies. He got that new show on, was it CBS?
CBS, I mean,
he got the new show on CBS. So yeah. He's doing something right. But personally to us,
We're just not as market. Let's just say
that. Yeah, we are not as market.
We're not part of that market.
He hit our Netflix shitty movie of the week.
Yep. And, so congratulations, Kevin.
And hey, good job being our number one.
Yeah.
Our number one. Congrats.
Thanks, Kevin James.
So we're going to switch over to the television show side. Mm-hmm. We both are a very big fan of animated shows.
True.
Cartoons. American Dad,
Futurama,
Family Guy, all those type of shows. But there's been one show that we have always latched onto for a while, and it's been around for 20 seasons. South Park.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing things a little bit differently the last 2 years, which I personally think is a good thing. So let's give you a little recap if you guys haven't really watched South Park that much. They came out in 1998, 1999, and they were kind of just – they would just make random episodes. It'd be funny. It wouldn't have to do with anything, you know.
Like single format.
Yeah, single format. Thank you. For up to about, you know, they'd have some special episodes where they continue on, do a little two-parter, three-parter. But the last two seasons, they've been doing something like, you know, they continue on every episode. It kind of refers back to it.
Yeah.
They're remembering. But this new season, they have been really, really been talking about the new Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
And how it has not been good. I don't know if you guys have seen the new Star Wars movie, but basically, me and John talked about this. It's basically a giant mashup of every single Star Wars movie put together. I think they took bits and pieces from all of them and tried to make a new Star Wars movie. And South Park kind of has this theme going on of member berries, where you don't, you know, would you like to explain the member berries?
Yeah, so basically, the rationale for this past election described through South Park, you know, with Donald Trump being elected and everything like that, apparently the South Park writers don't agree with that, and their explanation for why it happened is because people have been eating these things called member berries, which are essentially just, they're like these round fruits. I don't know how else to describe them, but they constantly talk about things from the past. Like,
remember?
They're constantly bringing up things from the past and things that, you know, things that
rehashing
people
stuff,
love.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, like, for example,
hey,
like,
remember Star Wars?
Yeah.
Remember Chewbacca?
Yeah.
Remember this? Remember that? It's basically
anything qualifies for being membered.
They're basically saying, you know, South Park always kind of does this. They kind of, you know, put their own how they feel like the world's shaping, and they think the world's just kind of like, hey, we just want to remember all the good things instead of kind of advancing.
Exactly.
Advancing in life.
Exactly. That's
like, hey. Donald
That's pretty
Trump.
Good. That's pretty good, Paul. Let me give you. I'm gonna give you an A minus for that one.
And
that's,
it goes about this. Donald Trump's slogan is "Let's make America great again." Basically, let's remember when America was really good again.
Yeah.
Let's remember all the great times. I'm gonna bring that back to you. I'm gonna remember this. We're gonna remember that. And South Park, what they've been doing is they've also been making fun of this member berry thing, but they've also been making fun of themselves within the show.
Yes.
So they're bringing back stuff from, they're on season 20 now. This is 20 years.
Yeah.
They're bringing back stuff from season 1, 2, and 3. Only like true original fans would remember. So it's kind of like they're playing a joke on themselves
exactly.
while talking about the bigger picture.
Yep. Yeah. And it's really funny because, I mean, I do that a lot, especially when it comes to like South Park. It's like, oh, remember whatever, something that happened in the third season. So it's really funny that they went all the way around to bring it against South Park fans, you know, so it's like no one's safe when you're watching South Park. There's
they can
no
make fun of anyone.
Yeah, there's no subject that can't be made fun of. And I love that. I love that about TV shows. I love that about movies, anything. So for them to kind of make fun of their fans and say
And themselves
and say this is a good show still, you know, that kind of thing.
But
we
also want to go in a different
it.
Direction.
Yeah, I like it. I'm fine with it. I'm
because
totally fine with it.
I'm really big of going on to watching a show and then going on the Reddit page and kind of looking at the post episode or the live episode.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, oh, man, you know, this season isn't that good. Remember the good old times, you know, remember the good episodes. But it's like you have people like us who's like, why not just try something new, try something fresh and just you already have your fan base. Just go for it. You know,
yeah.
You can always bring back the good times within an episode, but do your new format, which they're doing now.
And especially 20 years, you know, Trey and Matt, the creators of the show,
they've changed.
They have. It's been 20 years. Like
they're not kids or young adults anymore.
Yeah. They went from college, you know, like college age people to now Trey's married and has a family.
And his daughter is even doing voice acting for some of the shows.
Yeah.
You got to check it out on YouTube.
Yeah.
Kind of graphic. I don't know if you want to hear, you know, some of the words, but,
if anyone hasn't seen that, it's a great moment. I don't know.
Yeah, talk about it a little bit.
I love seeing that. Yeah, it's just, it's Trey Parker, the creator of the show, he does a lot of voices. Like they don't do guest voices on South Park. They just do the voices themselves for the most part. Like, you know, a good majority of them. So Trey kind of keeping it in the family. He brought on his daughter, who's, I want to guess she's maybe 2-3 years old.
If that, yeah.
She's playing the role of Ike, Kyle's younger brother, one of the characters on the show. And basically, he's just a little kid. He doesn't really have that many lines. And she took over this segment. She took over Ike's part. And it's so cute to just see.
It really is cute.
The dad and his daughter work on South Park together.
Because you see them in kind of like, you know, studio like we're in right now. They got the mic in front of us. And he's like, okay, 1, 2, 3, say this. And then he goes, 1, 2, 3. And then she says it. Yep. You guys got to go check it out.
Yeah. It's really great. But, you know, back to more of the show this season. One of the main things they've been focusing on has been Troll Trace, which is essentially a system that goes through every single person on the planet's internet history and puts it out for everyone to see. And I know, Paul, you're a big fan of the show. So you saw the meltdown when Troll Trace, the people from Denmark, they're the ones who designed Troll Trace. They basically went to Colorado and gave up a whole town. They released everybody in that town.
Everyone was freaking out. It basically looked like a zombie apocalypse. Not the zombies. Everyone's screaming around, oh no.
Yeah.
Like there was a wife saying, what is hornybutmarried.com? Like, it's like everyone's internet history is up. And could you imagine a world where you have a secret life on the internet, like a troll who's, you know, bashing someone, making fun of people, and, you know, hiding behind a little computer screen, and then all of a sudden, everyone now knows your that guy 42 is your username. Now everyone knows they can look up where you're at, and, you know, I'm sure a lot of us out there have a lot of stuff in our history that we don't want seen.
And there was a great moment in the most recent episode where Donald Trump, you know, goes into office, or it's Mr. Garrison playing Donald Trump, kind of, but when he goes into office and, you know, they're kind of giving him a breakdown of
what Troll Trace is and everything that goes on in the White House.
And all the countries, just like the diplomatic, like foreign affairs. It's so funny to see one of the examples is when he says, oh yeah, we're getting all these ships ready by Russia. And he's like, why? And he's like, well, because when Russia sees all of our emails, they're going to probably attack us.
And the other funny one was, it was like, China's calling right now. If we'll pinky promise not to look at your history if you don't look at ours. It's just, you know.
And I feel like that's closer to reality than we think. You know, it's a funny show, but just imagine if everyone on the planet's emails were leaked. What the hell would happen?
That would be insane. You know, you think people are one thing in the real world, but behind closed doors, like you said, with a troll, anything can happen. You can say whatever you want because you're hiding.
Yeah.
And
I guess at a government level, with all those people, look at Hillary Clinton. She lost the whole election because of her emails got released.
Yeah,
because
she wouldn't release them or tell us what really were on there.
So imagine the whole plan. Imagine if your boss, all of his emails were released, or one of your friends, or any. If you had access to that, that's just not something that should ever happen.
No,
hopefully it never happens.
Like if you're a fan of South Park and you haven't seen that episode yet, I think it's like episode like 4 or 5 when they finally released the beta. Pretty epic. It's probably the highlight of the episode because you basically shows the town, stuff's on fire, people are running around, like screaming, my internet history.
Total chaos, That's how it would be, though.
It really would. Chaos. That basically was chaos.
Yep.
South Park, Cartman, he's got his own little situation going on right now. How do you see that playing out in the final two episodes? He's got a girlfriend.
Yeah, you know, in past episodes, I know I'm remembering pretty hard right now, but But Cartman is one of the most evil characters in television history. There's almost nobody worse than Cartman. He's done so many bad things.
From chopping up his family to blocking out everyone to his own theme park.
Yeah, anything. He's just the worst person ever. So now this season where Cartman has a girlfriend and he's kind of being like really PC, it's so crazy to see because that's not who Cartman is.
It's not, because he's kind of scared about Troll Trace.
Yeah, and now we're seeing. I just don't know where they're gonna go with it.
I don't either. And
there's
I'm
so many
excited.
Ways. Yeah.
Hey, tune in Wednesday nights, 10 o'clock. South Park, new episodes.
Quick South Park plug.
South Park, give me free stuff.
good luck with that.
Comedy Central. but it's interesting to see where it's gonna go. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's the show's only getting better over time,
mm-hmm.
and it's a really good show.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on that?
You know, I think I think one thing I really want to talk about is turkey tomorrow.
Gobble gobble turkey or?
Yes, Thanksgiving turkey.
Thanksgiving.
What do you got planned for Thanksgiving?
I'm actually gonna be heading to New York.
Oh.
To go see my girlfriend's family and spend the weekend out there.
Well, hopefully they have the same turkeys in New York as they do in Michigan.
I hope so. I mean, they say New York's bigger and better, so maybe they got a bigger and better turkey.
Maybe they just got pizza or something.
Oh,
that'd be
fine. Pizza turkey?
Why not? Yeah, so.
But, yeah, we'd like to wish you all happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
If you're going anywhere, safe travels like myself. Just eat some food. Watch the Lions. Watch some football. That's what it's all about. Spend your time with your family. The guys huddling over in the corner watching football, the wives over, making the food, preparing the meal. Occasionally the husband, the host would come over and, do a little bit, but mostly guys watching football, wives are preparing the meal. Still overall great day for family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be great. And, I was talking to my mom earlier actually, and she has this like crazy secret recipe. It's not really a secret recipe, but it's macaroni and cheese. And she puts like 5 different kinds of mac and cheeses in it.
I love cheese, by the way.
And it's like basically a 10-pound just giant thing of cheese.
Oh my god! Like Velveeta cheese with all the cheese that they give you.
It's just so insane. I'm so excited for tomorrow. What's better than football, family? I mean, I know it can get awkward with families if you don't see them very often, but if you do, enjoy it. Like Paul's just saying, enjoy it, have a good time, eat way too much food. And enjoy some football, because why not? Watch some people get some concussions. Why not?
Speaking of football, we talked about it earlier in the show. Lions have a big game tomorrow.
Yeah.
Against Minnesota.
They do.
They hold their own destiny. First place. Well, they're kind of tied for first place. They have that game lead.
Yeah.
They lose. They're out first. Where do you see this game going tomorrow?
This is a classic trap game for the Lions. This is the game that the Lions lose. But this isn't the same Lions. These aren't the 0-16 Lions.
They're not.
These aren't the Lions that are going to play well in the first half and collapse in the second half. These are the Lions who are going to play bad in the first half and win in the second half, which I'm all for. And honestly, the Vikings have been on a skid. Why not go in there and beat them again? Why not? Why not be the bullies of the division? Because the Packers were that to us and the Vikings for the past 50 years.
Yeah, well, if this is Stafford's the shine to, rip off the next 3 years, he's in his prime years and just the win,
Yeah.
He could be that quarterback, the next Aaron Rodgers in our division, and just win the NFC for the next 3 years, and hopefully maybe we get lucky. Stafford takes us to the promised land where no Lion has ever been before.
I'll say 20-13 we win, because they don't have the offense. We don't have the defense, but
their defense is good.
Their defense is good, but their offense is bad.
And
we have a really good offense. So I love this matchup for both teams.
It's a short week. It's a Thursday.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. Lions can come out, blow them out, vice versa. I think I'm going to go with 28-21 Lions.
Nice.
I think they're going to – I go into the quarter naturally.
Okay.
And I think Stafford's going to pull a Stafford out of the hat and win us the game.
Well, I think we just cost the Lions a win because we both bet on it. Not bet on it, but we both said the Lions are going to win. And I think that's – I think that's a bad omen for us, for the Lions.
All I can say is let's go Lions. But once again, I would like to thank Michigan Prep the Pros to be a part of, their podcast team. And there's also other shows out there besides us. We have the Mac and Candela shows on Tuesdays. And we also have Thursdays on Thursdays with Nick Buckler. So you can check out those shows. John, any final thoughts for you before we wrap it up?
I hope Michigan beats Ohio State.
Go Michigan, playoffs.
Yeah, let's see how that goes.
Thanks again. Thanks for tuning in, and we will catch you another time. Goodbye.